I'd like to call the meeting to order, the October 5th, 2017 special meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. It is now 7:02, and I'm going to call the roll. Commissioner Prestis?
Here.
Commissioner Popwitz?
Here.
Commissioner Reno Ogden?
Here.
Commissioner Graham White?
Here.
Commissioner Pritz?
Here.
Commissioner Franek?
Here.
We have a quorum. Seeing that Chairman Zarowski is absent, I would ask for a motion for a chair pro tem for tonight's meeting. I'm sorry, a nomination. Thank you.
Okay, there you go.
Nominate former Chairman Franek.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Chairman Franek, the meeting is yours.
Everything that happens is yours.
Thanks, everyone, and welcome. Public testimony. We have a reasonably full house here. If you haven't previously signed up, that's fine. I'll ask the people who have signed up to speak in the order in which they did sign up, and anyone else is welcome to speak, as long as you identify yourself as well as your residence address.
Perhaps just before we get that, I guess I should just state the purpose of tonight's meeting so everybody's
sure.
Clear. The last meeting, which I believe was September 26th, the commission, as a group for the first time, reviewed the application that had been received for 747 William, the demolition of that historic structure. Since that time, the commission's expressed an interest in requesting additional information from the applicant as part of that application. Staff's taken that to the village attorney for his review, and he has agreed that is allowable under the ordinance, and so tonight's special meeting is to allow the commission to discuss what other information they'd like to gather from the applicant and then vote to approve that information so that the applicant can provide that. I'd also like to note that there's another item of the application process that the applicant has been required to and has agreed to provide. Number four of the ordinance says that a site plan and a front, side, and rear elevation drawings that would be of the existing structure need to be provided. Previously, when the applicant came in, again, this was the first demolition permit under the new ordinance, staff talked to the applicant about how that might not, in the staff's opinion, make sense because of it's a proposed demolition, so he wouldn't have elevation drawings of the existing. Mm-hmm. So that's why we considered a completed application at the time. We took that to the village attorney per the commission's request, and he disagreed with staff's opinion on that. So we've since asked the applicant to provide that. And then again, tonight we'll be discussing item 8, which is the additional information that the commission may want to request. I would welcome anybody that would like a copy. I have copies of the ordinance available here on the table up here. Help yourself. It's available on the website as well, but I realize some might find it useful to follow along. So.
The importance, by the way, of the date of the completed application is that's the date from which any potential demolition delay that the commission agreed to would run. So the fact that, and additionally, it would need to be provided sufficiently in advance of the public hearing. If in fact it wasn't, we would, I presume, have to postpone the public hearing until such time as we had had it for a sufficient period of time to consider it.
Correct. Yeah, I think as we wrap up tonight and understand what the rest of the application is going to look like, we can ask the applicant when they think a reasonable timeline is to return that, and then kind of start the public hearing timeline from there in terms of the notices. Obviously, that timeline would just be contingent on getting the material received by set date that the applicant determines.
Okay. First up, Sue Blaine.
Hi, I'm Sue Blaine. I'm 803 Monroe River Forest, and I want to talk a little bit about proposed demolition of 747 William.
Sue, for can I ask you to just, there you go.
Okay. So.
Thanks.
The home is one of 25 on the block developed concurrently by E.A. Cummings and built by Henry Hogans. The block is a unique collection of prairie homes not found elsewhere. River Forest designated the block as historically significant. Now, the significance of the block comes from the collection of homes rather than any one individual home. Therefore, the proposed demolition at 747 William will impact the entire block. To minimize the impact of the block, I would strongly encourage repair, renovation, and remodel rather than demolition. I recognize that the house was purchased as a development opportunity and that working within an existing structure rather than demolishing and starting over may decrease the profit margins for this investment. Developer Rob Sarvis stated that he was familiar with River Forest Preservation Code prior to purchasing. Now, remodeling may also present some challenges to the uniqueness of this block. Incremental degradation on the block may occur as changes are made to individual homes. Slight changes house by house will begin to accumulate until the block no longer retains its historical significance. The front facades of three homes have already been substantially altered, all completed before River Forest adopted the current preservation code. On a related note, three recent home remodels in River Forest retained very little of the original structure. 742 Lathrop went from a 1.5 to a 2-story home with none of the original facade elements. 1102 Franklin is currently being transformed from a ranch home to a 2-story house. Two exterior walls remain from the original structure. It remains to be seen if the original Lannenstone facade will be reinstalled. At 1215 Ashland, a 2,000-square-foot bungalow was converted to a 5,400-square-foot two-story home with one section of a roof and a bit of the chimney visible from the original home. The owners of 747 William completed this remodel. None of these homes were deemed architecturally significant by River Forest, but the changes highlight the extensive modifications that can result from remodeling. I would like to share a successful historical repair remodel story. In 1976, a fire occurred at the Frank Lloyd Wright-designed Hills home on Forest Avenue in Oak Park. The attic and most of the second floor were destroyed with extensive damage to the first floor as well. Rather than tearing down the remaining bits of the house, the DeCaro family, the home's owners, chose to rebuild the home using the original plans as a basis for the work. The facade and exterior materials were matched to the original structure. Today, the Hills DeCaro House, as it's now known, is an important part of the Frank Lloyd Wright Historic District and is viewed by thousands of visitors an example of Wright's prairie-style architecture. Whether remodeling or demolishing the property, I suggest the following restrictions at 747 William. First, maintain the front facade or create an exact replica of the original. Second, use the same building materials, stucco with wood trim for the exterior of the home, to maintain its original character and presence on the block. Third, include the same setback from the street as the current house. The homes were originally sited using a grid system and they all fit together. Fourth, keep the size to approximately 3,000 square feet or maybe even a little less. The average home size on the block using the Cook County Assessor's records is 2,249 square feet. Only two of the 25 prairie homes on the block exceed 3,000 square feet. I sincerely hope we can preserve the character and significant features of 747 William. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill McDonald.
Good evening. I'm Bill McDonald. I'm at 803 Bonnie Bray. And bottom line is I am in opposition to getting a certificate of appropriateness for demolition for 847 William. And I will say one thing for Mr. Sarvis. He has said in some previous discussions that he has done 1215 Ashland and proposed that that nice house would lead him to do a house that would fit the streetscape on William, fit in nicely with the long row of prairie-inspired houses. So I will tell you that I think your house you did on William is, or on Ashland is pretty nice. Unfortunately, went up and down the block, and there are 11 different styles of house on that block. It's all incohesive, not coordinated, and I don't think the fact that you did, I think, a very nice job with that totally undistinguished little one-story building has any relevance to William Street, which is a streetscape that has great coordination. Thank you.
Thank you. Greg Kunster?
Kenster.
Kenster, sorry.
Stir your coffee.
Thank you.
I'm really here. You can get one in.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, sir. I'm really here just to deliver some plans, but we had a fire, and we're trying to preserve the building. The village code does not allow us to keep windows, and we have to put a sprinkler system in and a fire system in, etc. But we're trying to keep the look, and we're trying to keep it the way it is. The village is trying to get us to change it to a single-family home. It was built in 1895. It's one of the first buildings in the village. It's just a few doors away here. And so we're asking for your support in at least maintaining the way it looks on the exterior. And we can't change it. And because it's built in 1895, you really can't make a lot of changes to the interior supports without spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. So here, I've got a copy of our preliminary plans that I'd like to deliver to Chairman, and any suggestions or advice you have are appreciated.
Greg, thanks for coming. We're happy to review. This is sort of a special meeting to consider.
I didn't know that.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, no apology necessary. We'll probably put it on the agenda for our next regularly scheduled meeting.
We can definitely do that. I'd just like to note, too, just so everybody's understanding, and you yourself might not be, that the property of 516 Park is not on the significant properties list.
Right.
So you're certainly welcome, and I assume the commission would welcome.
Same, a lot of the same issues they're raising.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's that style of building on that block, and, it's...
Sure.
It's the building next door is identical. The one across is the one a couple
okay.
across the street that are built the same way, and it's a that's
okay.
So,
among our commissioners are two experienced licensed architects, and we pride ourselves in making cogent comments when people come to us for some suggestions. So we're more than happy to discuss this with you, probably at our next meeting.
Materials have changed in 130 years, so.
Sure.
But we're going to try to keep it as close as we can. Thank you.
Thank you for your interest. Thanks for coming.
That's great.
Is there anyone else? Ma'am? You can just state your name and address when you get to the podium.
Good evening. My name is Pat Hyman, and I live at 714 William Street. And I've lived there since 1979. At the last meeting, I was present at the last meeting, I was listening to my neighbors talk about their homes and how they felt about their homes. And after the meeting, I started to think about, well, I wonder if there's some other people that feel strongly on this matter as well. So what I did was I came up with a document. I'd like to read it to you now. It's short. And then I'll tell you what I did with it. So I addressed it to the Historic Preservation Commission regarding the property at 747 William Street, and the document is as follows. We, the undersigned residents of the 700 block of William Street, River Forest, Illinois, are against the demolition of the house at 747 William Street. We instead encourage the new owners of 747 William Street to renovate and/or add on to the existing structure in accordance with the style of the existing homes on the block. So then I canvassed the block in the time that I had, and I got quite a number of signatures. I think if I would have had more time, I probably could have visited more homes. I didn't quite get to everybody in the time that I had, but I got close. And I also want to mention that I kind of wish that I would have been able to record some of the conversations I had with the owners, because they shared quite a lot with me. Some of the things I heard was, I fell in love with this house because of the Prairie School lines. I fell in love with the neighborhood because of the way all the houses sit on their lots, on the block, and the way they present themselves and their relationship to the lot. People told me that they were very upset about the idea of demolition you know, just basically sharing with me how they felt about their homes. And it was really a nice experience to talk to so many people individually. It was really quite special. So I want to leave this with you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else? Sir?
Hi, I'm Mark Witt at 710 William. I just wanted to make a quick note, which I think we've probably talked about before, but last July, Village President Kathy Aducci passed, and the board passed a resolution noting the significance of the 700 block of William Street, and that's what led to us getting the special street signs. And so if someone wants to see a copy of that, we do have that resolution that was passed. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Sir?
My name is Michael Rule. I'm at 343 Ashland, that way. After the last meeting, I made a point of going to the block because, to be honest with you, I had not ever driven up it. And I did so, and then I stopped to take a look at the home in question. And remembering some of the comments that had been made about limited vehicle access to the back and the drooping roof lines and some other structural issues, so I took some photographs and did some assessments based on my experience in doing this kind of renovation work. I will say that it is perhaps the least impressive one of the homes on the block. It doesn't stand out. But that notwithstanding, it is coherent and it belongs, it's the right size, it belongs in that streetscape. The issue with access for the driveway, what I had noted is that the adjacent house actually has a driveway that bumps out, and I think it crosses the lot line into that particular property. There's plenty of room to relocate the driveway and have a shared access on the south side. So that would solve some of those issues. The roofline droop at the back is because there was a back addition that was then, they tried to make it coherent with the rest of the house, and that roofline of the addition is at a slightly different angle than the main roof line. So it's not a major structural issue, it's just a sort of straighten it out at the back kind of an issue. So my take on it is that a rehabilitation of this home in keeping with the character of the neighborhood is perfectly sound and perfectly doable, but not having had a chance to look at the foundation issues that were raised, which might change that opinion. So that's just my observations.
Thank you. Mike. Anyone else? Yeah.
I'm Cindy Rubin. I live at 715 William Street. And, I kind of just reiterate what Pat was saying. My name is on the sheet that she brought around. And, I've been in our home for 5 years, and I just think it's a special block. It's a special block of homes. We fell in love with our home, not really understanding the significance of the history at the time, but have grown to really care about that. And I think that it's important for this house to maintain the integrity of the historical significance of the block.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else? Going once. Go.
Good evening. I'm Mark Zinni. Actually, I'm no longer a resident of William Street, but I was fortunate enough to be a resident for over 30 years. And I was fortunate enough to get into the house. The client was generous enough to let us go in there. I am an architect. I've been practicing, unfortunately or unfortunately, well over 35, 40 years. And I drove down the block, and fortunately, over my tenure over there, I had a chance to probably do renovations or additions to more than 10 of the residences there. It's a unique street. Unfortunately, in my opinion, if you would remove this residence, you would be taking a tooth out of the smile of the street. I think there's some wonderful additions that have been done, very tasteful. And when I run the numbers mentally in my mind, I think as a developer's point of view, you'd be better off renovating and adding addition before I would consider demolition and trying to do it new. That's my opinion based on my experience. Thank you very much. Good luck.
Thanks for your comments. Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Rob Sarvis, the owner of 747 William. I just want to clarify one thing. Sue Wang brought up that the home I renovated on 1215 Ashland was a bungalow. It was actually a 1956 ranch that was built at that time. It really had no architectural significance whatsoever, and it was not a bungalow. It was a one-story home, and it looks kind of like a bungalow now. So, I mean, it tried to fit it in with River Forest architecture, and I think it does, and people are very happy with it. So, with 747 William, yes, there are lots of opinions on what can be done with the property. My goal is to create a home that fits within the block, and I've stressed that and I've stated that. Unfortunately, I think there are a lot of things about the home that really, for modern living, don't pertain to the standards that people are looking for. So it has lower ceilings, they're 8 feet tall, people prefer to have taller ceilings. It's just, in the driveway situation, there's this giant beautiful tree on the parkway. If we move the driveway to the south side, it could impair that tree. There's no question about it. The root structure has been there for, I don't know how long, probably over 100 years. So to carve in a new driveway to the south side, we could potentially lose that tree, and I don't even know if the village would allow it. So yes, that the driveway obviously is a very narrow pass, and I'm just here to state my case, and you know, I understand there's lots of opposition. Obviously, most are opposed. So. And my intent is to build something that fits in character, and I think people would be happy with what's constructed. And I'm willing to work within. There was mention of creating something that is a similar facade and working within those boundaries. So I'm here for suggestions or what people would like to hear. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Going once. Twice, three. Public hearing portion is closed.
I think at this point I'd like to just take a second and provide back some answers and some context from the last meeting. So first of all, the question was raised as to whether or not the commission could impose conditions on the certificate of appropriateness. Sort of. So this is what our staff's conversation with the village attorney came to conclusion at. The ordinance does not give the commission the right to impose conditions like it would the DRB or ZBA in a way that is binding on the applicant. However, the ordinance does require the commission to, in the event that it withholds a demolition certificate of appropriateness, it requires them to issue a demolition delay. The ordinance specifically cites that demolition delay could be for a period of up to 6 months from the date of the completed application. The village attorney's of the opinion that if the commission saw fit, it could issue a demolition delay for a period of shorter of 6 months in exchange for some conditions, such as agreeing upon the new structure. That would be a permissible condition to apply. I just want to make it clear, though, that the applicant could choose to forego those conditions, not agree to them, and wait the 6 months. So just so everybody's clear on that. Now, again, I'm going to restate the options and sort of the question before the commission. The decision as to whether or not to issue the property a certificate of appropriateness for the demolition of the structure for 747 William. As Commissioner Pritz asked me to clarify, there's three options essentially, big picture before the commission. One could issue a certificate of appropriateness for the demolition, which would allow the applicant to immediately come in for the demolition permit for that property. Two, the commission could withhold a certificate of appropriateness and issue a demolition delay for up to 6 months with no conditions. And then three, could do the same but with conditions, saying that, for example, the demolition delay will be for no period, you know, 0 days, in exchange for conditions that the property look like something that's proposed. I want to be clear for the commission and for the public, though, that while part of tonight's discussion is requesting other information from the applicant, bar a condition put on it, agreed to by the commission and the applicant, those things would, for lack of a better term, would not be binding. So one of the proposed information that some of the commissioner members have asked for, if would be considered relevant or related to the project, would be some rendering, pictorial renditions of what the property would look like in the future should the current property be demolished. Unless a condition was agreed on and imposed, those past the 6 months, the village has no mechanism to require that that specific property be built. Does anybody on the commission have questions about that?
Just as the newest commissioner, I just want to make sure I understand this. Mm-hmm. The three choices are, the first is we provide a certificate of appropriateness, in which case the new homeowner could tear down the home and build anything within the zoning ordinances of the village or within the regulations of the village. Mm-hmm. Second is we deny the certificate of appropriateness, in which case there's a clock that starts when the application is complete, which, as I understand, is not yet. But whenever the final pieces are provided, that clock starts, and at the end of, at maximum 6 months, the owner is able to, again, tear down the house and build whatever he wants within the ordinances of the village. So we can't stop the house from being torn down in either of those cases. And then the third choice is we provide a certificate of appropriateness, but in discussion with the owner, and say these conditions, which I think are conditions that you build a house, maybe taken from the earlier testimony of stucco and, you know, in the character of the street and all that, and then we'll provide you the certificate of appropriateness sooner, but only if we can agree to terms. And then he's obligated. So in the first two situations, what he builds, we can't control. In the third situation, then with agreement, we can all agree to build something that continues to fit and the new owner is obligated then to build something that meets those conditions.
Obligated on the point that he agrees to, agrees to, and it would actually, yes, agrees to. And yeah, I just want to state again that the ordinance does not provide specific regulations on the conditions. However, it does provide the commission the decision on how long they want to issue the demolition delay for. The village attorney agreed that it's within the spirit of the ordinance that a condition could be in exchange for a shorter delay period.
It can be a negotiation with the current homeowner to make sure it fits the conditions or the requirements of the street.
Correct.
Can I ask a question about that? Is that a legally binding agreement?
Question.
He can say, yes, I agree to the conditions, and then renege on that.
It's my interpretation from the village attorney that, yes, I don't think the, I guess I don't have that specific language, but I do, I don't think the village attorney would have represented it if that wasn't the case. But
so it's legally binding.
Yeah, so I mean, but that's, again, provided that the applicant would agree,
yeah,
and then actually move forward with the demolition at that shorter time frame, right? So, yes. And then I guess lastly, I just want to reiterate from Commissioner Pritt's point as he was speaking there, if this structure was taken down, any new structure built on this property would have to fit within all zoning and building code regulations of the village currently. So I just want to be clear on that. In other words, setbacks, lot coverage, things like that would have to be fit within. Just so everybody's clear. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any agreement providing that we have one with the owner, is enforceable in law. In other words, there's no way of reneging out of an agreement like that.
Only
is that correct?
There's always a way to renege on an agreement. You just don't abide by it.
In the case of...
Well, that's...
In the case of the condition. Yes.
Yes. Is it enforceable?
Yeah, yes, if the applicant agreed to the condition and took in exchange a shorter demolition delay that was conditioned upon the existing structure looking like X, being built to look like X, yes.
Okay. Is that all in writing, signed off on? I mean, I...
Would we put it in writing?
Yeah.
Sure. I have the village attorney draft that up. If that's the route that the commission took to go, that we're going to have a shorter demolition delay in exchange for certain conditions, we could draft that up. But then again, I just want to be clear that those conditions are only binding on the applicant should the applicant agree to them.
Yeah, of course. Right.
Okay.
Of course. Yeah. I see a commissioner who's an attorney with a grin on his face.
And my role here is not to provide legal advice, The point that occurs to me as a layman who also happens to be a lawyer for his day job is that whether a contract is binding isn't really a black and white question. A homeowner, for example, could make a representation, a binding, written, signed in blood representation, and then not abide by it, and then the question is, what is the penalty? And I don't know the answer to that, and I'm not here to get us into a legal quagmire.
Yeah.
There is an answer, I'm shaking my head a little bit because the questions all seem to suggest that folks get some comfort out of an agreement being binding, but to me, people ignore binding legal agreements every day. That's why I have a job. The question is, okay, so if you breach a binding agreement, then what? And often the then what isn't all that impressive.
I asked just so everybody knows, we were hoping the village attorney could be here tonight. He just couldn't. So I got as much advice from him before as possible to provide that. And if there's more questions after, happy to take that back to him.
John, I just wanted to add to your point about a new home would be built according to current zoning laws. I believe the maximum house would be about 3,200 square feet, but the front yard setback would be obliterated. That's the average of the two houses adjacent to it. And if one wished to make the maximum investment on their property, they would move that house as far forward as they could, allow for maximum backyard, that kind of thing. So the front yard is not protected in the current zone.
Does anybody know what that setback currently is?
It's the average of, I think, each adjacent house.
But
I mean, what it is
now. Structure.
What it is now, it's I got the books at home. I didn't bring it in time to get it.
3,200 square feet for the house or for the
based on the lot size. You multiply the lot size times the multiplier.
While we're providing information to the public, let me repeat what I said at our last commission meeting for those that didn't attend, and we always encourage public attendance and participation, both pro and con, on anything that we discuss. At the time that the public hearing is scheduled, we encourage everyone to speak, whether in favor or opposed. In the past, when we've had public hearing, specifically in connection with amending the ordinance several years ago, the village president and several members of the board of trustees did in fact attend. While it's always possible to listen to whatever is said tonight or in any other commission meeting via MP3 online. People being people, it's always best to do it live and do it all together. We fully recognize that it's not everybody's favorite event to come to a commission meeting or, God forbid, speak publicly. But we try to make things as easy as possible because, after all, we are all neighbors, and this typically tends to be a pretty civil discussion. That's one of the few requirements that we have. So accordingly, we would sincerely invite everyone to come to speak their piece at the time the public hearing occurs, whether it is for or against the proposed demolition.
The setback from the front of the lot measured by the parkway sidewalk is about 42 feet. I'm wondering if it's on the plan. Somebody that looks at plats more often than I might have a better idea. This measures at about 36 feet.
Six feet thereabouts to the front of the screen, the projecting bay.
Can you please translate what that means? So the new structure could be 7 feet in front of
I'm not sure the exact amount it could be, but I think in the current code, take the average of the two adjacent houses, and that's your required setback.
Okay.
One is set back, but one is set up very close.
That's what makes the block
beautiful. Exactly. It's an important key to that block. So
exactly.
You got it.
Question about the three options that you talked about earlier.
Sure.
The third option you brought up, I'd call it.
Just the microphone, I'm sorry, just for the recording, the benefit of anybody trying to listen to this post.
I'm looking for clarification of...
Excuse me, sir. Could you give us
your name? Sure. My name is Tom Berzichudek. I live at 754 William.
Thanks.
What I would call the third option, where you compromise, you say you'll do a shorter than 6 month delay for certain considerations. Is it true that if those considerations aren't, let's say the delay is only 30 days if they provide a plan and everyone approves the plan, okay? If the plan's never provided, does the clock just tick and at the end of 6 months, the deal's off the table and the builder can do whatever they wish?
I would say yes. So I would say that it would look something like the commission is offering a demolition delay in X days, something less than 6 months, in exchange for some conditions. If those conditions aren't agreed upon, then the demolition delay would be 6 months.
Right. Okay, so in essence, all three options could be identical in outcome if the person doesn't live up to the...
That's correct.
Okay, all right, thank you.
At 6 months, there's no stopping the demolition of the house.
Right.
Yes, sir.
I'm just reviewing the ordinance, and I'm finding Michael Rule at 343 Ashland, one more time. I'm just reviewing the ordinance, and I'm finding it a little bit contradictory or perhaps hard to understand. In section 13.1.6, Certificate of Appropriateness, A lists the reasons that a certificate would be required. B talks about exemptions for the Director of Public Works if he needs to have something done. And then C is construction standards. And in construction standards, one of the characteristics is demolition of a local landmark shall not be permitted if a structure is economically viable in its present condition or could be economically viable after completion of commercially reasonable alterations, even if demolition would permit a more profitable use of such site. So that's a standalone.
That's as to a landmark. A landmark is different than
a
significant property.
So this is not a landmark.
That is correct.
It's a district. So
this is a significant property.
But it's not.
It is not a landmark.
It doesn't fall under the landmark.
Correct.
Okay. So this only applies to landmarks.
That particular section,
yes. And so anything else, basically, it can be demolished after 6 months, is the way that this ordinance is written.
Yes.
Okay. Somebody slipped.
I would just note for anybody reading along in the ordinance, this property is not a local landmark. It is a significant property. Additionally, you might see some relevant information to this in the ordinance that there's language in here in the case that the applicant has claimed economic hardship, which to this point they have not.
Okay. Do any of the commissioners have any general comments regarding 747 William before we get into any requests for additional information?
Excuse me, can I just ask a question?
Sure.
What does it take to constitute landmark status?
I'm Lori Blazek. I'm at 730 William. I've been in this property for almost 15 years. I'm just curious as to what it takes to constitute landmark status in River Forest. Is there any possibility that the folks on the block can apply for landmark status at this point? Thank you.
Landmark status is generally something that's based upon the voluntary request of the owner. We can certainly look into.
Is it a single property or can it be a block? Because there is no other block like this, so it would be an anomaly.
Yeah, so I would direct, yeah, and please, by all means, help yourself to a copy. So 13.1.4 is the section that stipulates the applications for the approval of a local landmark. I guess to your question, if it could be a whole block, I think the only way that this speaks to it would be in the event that all of the homeowners on the block landmarked their own homes. So to be clear, the list of significant architecturally and historically significant properties that the village has is something that was imposed on those homes by the village in the process of the historical survey to preserve those homes. The step above that, if you will, in terms of protection and rules, is the local landmark status, which is something that the homeowner would impose on their own home. Dave, you think I'm missing anything?
No. It was, John, this thing we received today from you, that it was listed 826-77 as an historic district, and there's a National Register of Historic Places inventory nomination form that lists every building on that block from 1969 of July.
I'm just looking for a loophole in the block landmark.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no other block like this in the country. Mm-hmm. So it's a big deal. And I understand it's an anomaly, so maybe we have an attorney somewhere who could look for a loophole to do that. Because I would be happy to work on that.
We can certainly ask the village attorney to look into that.
Into the possibility for the block to be landmarked as a whole.
Correct.
But
and whether that can be initiated by, to what extent, what consents need to be obtained regarding the submission of the entire block as a landmark.
But I'm sorry, I'm confused because of the requirement. Doesn't the ordinance require the homeowner to apply for landmark status for the structure?
It does. And a question has been asked by a member of the public that is not specifically spelled out within the ordinance. Therefore, I'm asking that village staff speak with the town attorney to get an answer.
Does
yes.
13.1.2 definitions, and this is under, this is C, a structure which is one of a contiguous groupings of such structures having a sense of cohesiveness expressed through a similarity of characteristics of a style period or method of construction and representing the architectural significance of the whole group.
Which applies to the above architecturally significant, which is, I think, from my understanding and reading of the ordinance, the reason why the block, every home on it, has been appointed to the architectural significance list.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the definition of what significance means.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a term of art for purposes of the statute.
Can I ask a question, Mr. Ogden?
Yes.
Ron Hyman, 714 William Street. The document that you were just reading from that had all of our houses listed, what is the source of that, and what is the significance of that?
This was sent to us and John distributed today from the National Register of Historic Places from Lisa DeChera, Directory of Advocacy for Landmarks, Illinois, and addressed it to Chairman Zarowski, saying, John, can I read what this says?
Sure.
It says, brought to my attention today that the C of A application has been submitted for the commission review regarding demolition of a request for 747 William Street. This property is contributing to the National Register listed River Forest Historic District, see attached. and I urge the commission to deny approval and impose the maximum demolition delay as allowed by the Historic Preservation Ordinance. And he also goes on to mention that this is eligible for tax credits and a tax freeze if the renovation is done versus a demolition.
I have a question. Should I go up to the...
Please.
That the tax freeze, by the way, is a 13-year freeze on the current tax status.
Hi, everyone. My name is Marky Ritz. I live at 1032 North Lathrop Avenue in River Forest. I have a question. Mr. Service, he mentioned that people just aren't interested in homes with 8-foot ceilings, and yet I think probably that the majority of these homes on this block, at least 24, 25, including his, have 8-foot ceilings. So how can people not be interested in them? How can they not live in them? I mean, tell me. I think that there's, you know, this is a bad argument that you're using to get the house torn down, 8-foot ceilings. That's it.
Thank you. Was there someone else? It's kind of unusual, by the way, that we're having a public discussion after, but unless the commission feels otherwise, I think we're sort of here to discuss the general topic, so the extent to which people are germane, respectful, not overly repetitive, we're more than happy to listen to what people have as comments.
Can I just ask one more question?
Please.
Has everyone on the committee seen the book that was published about the block?
William Storr's book.
Yeah. I have not.
Yeah, I think we probably are the only block in the western suburbs that have a book published about the historical nature of the block. So I just want to put that in the record.
You're also in Harry Robinson's bio written by his son. You're on the video that they used to raise money for WTTW Western Suburbs. Right. You're in there as well, and several articles by architectural critics.
Anyone else while we're at it? Okay, going back to the agenda, does anyone have any general thoughts before we get into discussing what, if anything, the commission would like to ask in terms of additional information from the applicant? Al?
Yeah. At heart, what we basically have is a different philosophy, a different way of looking. Are these houses a resource which can be harvested by anyone who can afford to harvest them? Or do they have a protective status because they're in a historic zone or whatever? In the United States, we prevent the harvesting of natural resources by having national parks. That's not necessarily appropriate here. But the point is there are two different points of view. Some people feel that if you, in fact, can afford to buy it, it's yours to do with as you wish. And others say, no, the community has an interest. So that's a basic, fundamental difference, which I don't think it will be easy to bridge. And so a compromise is probably the most logical way of dealing with it, as long as this commission has the limits that it has on its powers to act. The limit being we cannot delay a demolition for more than 6 months. That's basically it. And I don't know if legally the village fathers can do any more than that to enhance our powers, but that is the current situation, and that is what we must live with. Thank you.
Anyone else?
I have a question. I don't know if it's for here or for the next part of this discussion, but if we decide to, what's the process by which we need to decide to enter into discussions about possible conditions if we want to pursue the third path, and how do we do it once we decide to do it?
I would presume that what we would do, correct me if I'm wrong, John, is we'd hold the public hearing, listen to the public comments, both for and against. We'd make up our own determination. As a commission, we have to issue a written decision within 15 days of the conclusion of the public hearing. We do not, there's nothing that specifically says we have to vote that night. We can choose to, if we wish, or we can delay the vote to another public forum.
Yeah, the public hearing has to be concluded within 60 days of the receipt of the completed application, and then the decision 15 days thereafter. To your question again about the process for imposing those conditions, I would say that that's part of the process of making a determination on the application, which is what the hearing process is for. So the hearing process is for gathering all relevant information, hearing all interested persons, and having whatever relevant discussion needs to be had to make a decision.
There is an element of this which is a negotiation. I just want to understand how that negotiation would take place once we've collected the information, decided as a commission what we want to propose, and it calls for a conversation of sorts. Would that be in one of our commission meetings? Would that be?
I'd say it would happen as part of the public hearing process.
Commission meeting, or you know, discuss it. I mean, how does that work?
I think it would happen as part of the public hearing process. I mean, the applicant will be in attendance at those, and I think that that's how that process.
It would be a give and take in that. In that meeting, so it would be a public discussion with, because I'm sure he'd love to discuss it with attorneys and architects if we go down that path and that sort of thing, right?
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe it's something we have to think about. Maybe like the other questions, we have to ask the question of the village attorney, but
about how the process of setting the conditions.
Yeah, I mean, we want it to be open, but at the same time, at some point, you have to be sitting down, and people have to be checking with other people, and every meeting can't be a public meeting.
In the event that more than two commissioners are there, it has to be a public meeting. I suppose the commission could direct one member to negotiate on their behalf. I think that would be within the realm of possibility.
We want to do this efficiently, right? Otherwise, we'll use the whole 6 months.
Yeah, I'm happy to get the attorney's suggestion on that.
Terms if we go to that path.
Okay.
And I think the purpose of the ordinance is to use up to the whatever the balance of the 6 month is period as in order to discuss and determine. So I think that's really the intent.
If we go down that path,
yep.
Then we're going to. But if we go down that path, my interest is in including a discussion as efficiently as possible so that there's as much benefit as possible and therefore desire to agree to the terms for the current homeowner. If the process takes 6 months, then it's like, I'll do whatever I want at this point.
Right.
Not that you're not honorable, but you know, my point is why? At that point, there's no point to him wanting to agree to terms. So it'd be best if we could discover efficiently what would be amenable, then there's still benefit left to him and there's benefit left to the block if that's what's decided on as the path forward.
Yeah, all that's based upon whatever the commission determines as a group.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Do any of the commissioners have any specific information that they would seek from the applicant so that we could discuss it now and vote as to whether we wish to include that as a request from the commission? Brian?
None here.
Al?
Yeah, I think we can help Mr. Service with many of the issues, the driveway, the tree. The one thing I'd like to get more information on is the big claim of it's structurally unsound. I'd like to get a structural report on the house, the span of the current joist, foundation condition. That'll help us make a better decision on the viability of it.
Okay. I'd like to note, since that's come up, this is one of the things that again, I tried to get as much legal advice before the meeting as I could. So again, as I noted earlier, it's not a landmark and it's not, there's no claim of economic hardship. So I'd be curious as to, and I apologize that I don't quite understand of what the engineer structural report would entail, but the village attorney had question as to whether or not that's within the realm because the there's no economic hardship, and so the economic hardship piece can come into play if the applicant claims that on the certificate of appropriateness, or would automatically come into play in the local landmark. So I guess that's
understood, John. Short of that, with extra elevations of the house and the floor plans that we already have, we could probably do some determination based on that even.
So the exterior elevations, front, side, and rear, are already requested, as well as a site plan of the property.
Okay.
So we cannot make the request?
I mean, here's what I would say. The village attorney has provided an opinion that that is questioning whether or not that's in the realm of the commission. What I would say is if the commission wanted to make that request and the applicant agreed to fulfill it, then that's all great and good. In the event that the commission wanted to make that request and the applicant did not want to fulfill it, I would ask that the commission be as specific as possible about what the request is, and then I would ask the village attorney to make some formal legal opinion in writing of whether or not that is going to be considered. But given the previous opinion from him, I just, and that's why I ask, we talked briefly about it the other day, but I wasn't quite sure what's entailing in the structural analysis. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to, for me to.
I could put something in writing if needed, but I see your point too. It's not part of the request in the actual package or request for a demolition permit. So.
Right, although it's come up as to the profitability of both options, the issue of economic hardship isn't at heart in this decision.
So we're not asking.
I can't make that decision for you. Yeah,
we're asking whether it happens or not. We don't know, but certainly the exterior elevations would help me and probably Tom as architects determine. So
the exterior elevations are for sure. That request is already in, as well as a site plan of the existing. That's a for sure.
Can I just weigh in for a moment? It's hard for me to understand how there could be any issue with us making a request if the request is to voluntarily provide information that any member of the commission would find helpful. I do get the separate question of whether we have the authority to demand that a homeowner or a developer jump over certain hurdles. We can't make those up, but a request that information be provided voluntarily to us where that information would be helpful. Especially to someone who has, you know, expertise in the relevant area, it's hard for me to get my head around how that could be a problem. And then second, in terms of the relevance, you know, I get the economic hardship point, but what I hear David saying is that better understanding whether the property is even structurally sound would help guide an answer to at least in his mind to the question. I don't mean to speak for you, but when I hear you say you'd like to see a report on whether the property is structurally sound, it makes sense to me, not because of some new economic hardship element that anyone wants to introduce into the analysis, but just because it seems to go to the core question of whether demolition meets the appropriateness standard that we undoubtedly are here to apply.
I agree.
And isn't it implied economic hardship when we're told we got to tear this thing down because it's structurally unsound?
Economic hardship is a specific category that's got to be introduced by the applicant. The applicant hasn't done it at this point. I agree with Brian. I think we can always request information. We may or may not be able to compel the production of that information, but certainly information as to the current condition and what would be required in order to correct any claim present deficiencies would certainly be beneficial to the commission.
And I think, like you say, with the if we have the ability to demand it, I think what it really comes down to is if we have the ability to require that to be a part of the completed application until we start the time process.
Yeah, and that's to me a different and more complicated question. But if we can ask and the homeowner can say, if we have five requests and the homeowner says I'll voluntarily provide 1 through 4, but you're going to have to make me on number 5. Well, then we can answer the question about number 5.
Yep. Absolutely.
He might say, I'll provide you all the things you asked for, which makes it easy.
Yep. Carla, any thoughts?
I was not going to ask for, structural analysis. I was going to ask for the financial problems that he would need to correct there, because most of the things he was saying, well, the floors are, slope and, the ceilings are low. And these are not basically correctable things in a 100-plus-year-old home, but it's exactly what everybody lives with on the 700 block of William, and I know I live on Park, and I live in a 1908 Prairie Schoolhouse, which has sloping floors and 8-foot high ceilings, and I've lived there for 32 years, and it's not a problem. So a lot of these houses do sell in River Forest. Most do sell in River Forest, and people do not object to the fact that this is what they are buying. And if my feeling is, if you're going to live in River Forest, you probably are going to buy an old house, and if you don't like old houses, then go to Naperville. You know, that's the reason. Build in Naperville. So obviously the financial question is whether this will be as profitable as the new owner hopes if he, you know, takes the time to rehab it. I think we're kind of like out there right now. There are no plans. I don't believe there are any architectural plans for a new home if the old one is demolished. And Mr. Sarvis, I believe you've said several times that you would like to work with the commission, but yes. I don't have any idea what that means.
I've stressed this from the beginning, that I've been willing to work with everyone here on to right. try to create something that works, as I've said before, with the street and with the village. So. I'm in the process of starting architectural plans, but obviously part of it is getting through this process to see where everyone here, how what their thoughts are. And so we're starting to, the process takes time as well. The drawings take time. We bought it about almost 2 months ago. So we're just starting to go through the design elements, and obviously there are things that can change. Obviously if we can work together, you might have some ideas on how to design it versus what I would choose. So that's kind of like, I would like to get through the process a bit and see where we're headed, if you can understand that and appreciate it. We can draw something up, but that still takes time, and if you're not going to appreciate that, then we'd have to go back to the drawing board again to do new drawings. So I'd really like to kind of feel where we're at in the process.
That still doesn't give me any idea of what you mean by working with the commission. I mean, we have two architects on the commission. Do you want them to design a house that they feel is
I have an architect that I've hired for the project. Right. Yes, Pat Magner, I believe you
right.
met. So... No, sure, if they want to have some insight, that'd be fine.
Are you saying that if we were to ask you to, to work with us on conditions for the house, right?
Right.
A certificate of appropriateness with conditions. Are you saying that you'd be willing to enter into that discussion?
Right. Obviously, I've stressed that throughout these meetings. I've stated that
it's
willing.
Now,
you
right?
know, and I know specifically
right.
it's hard sometimes to express what I'm not used to public speaking. This isn't something I do. I'm not an attorney, so and obviously it's a stressful situation. So, yes, I'm willing to work with everyone here to create something that I think everyone would be satisfied with. So, the house, many of people have been through it. I've opened it up to whoever was willing to come through this property to see the condition of it. Yes, everything can be repaired and rebuilt in anything, but obviously there is a point where it's not justified or worth it. This house, which was expressed earlier, is probably the least architecturally significant one on the block. And I'm sorry, it's there's some elements to it which I appreciate that some people like to have sloping floors, and that adds character to a property. And this has, but this house in particular, there's no on the interior, there is no trim, and most of it's original. This was never designed as an architectural showpiece. And I understand that this street collectively has some elements to it which people would like to preserve. And I'm willing to incorporate those elements into a new property. And I'm willing to work with everybody here to do that. And I think, and I've lived, as I said last meeting, I've lived in River Forest for almost 17 years. I live at 826 Monroe Avenue, right around the corner. I love this village. You know, I have three children, and it's important to me to keep the integrity of this town. No, this is not a Naperville, and I don't want to create homes that are in Naperville. So, unfortunately, this home, it's the elements to me, and some people find it, I mean, if the village would like to purchase it from me and turn it into a museum, I'm more than willing to sell it back to you. So I don't know what else to do. I think I don't see the value to it, but I really want to create something in the character of the neighborhood.
Rob, I think, just off the top of my head here, the point is that these were all built at the same time of a similar ilk and a similar
right.
look.
Sure.
They've all had some renovation done to them or additions
right.
to them.
Right, a lot of them have been extensively renovated.
But you can recognize every single facade from the first picture to where it is still.
You can see you can't. Parts. You can't. There's some homes on the front, on the facade, they've been significantly altered. There's a brown home that is cedar shake. I think originally, I've talked to the owners, I know the owners there. Mm-hmm. They put a master bathroom on the front. A lot of these homes have additions that are on the side. No, these homes, a lot of them have been significantly
I'd
altered.
I'd like to see the picture of that before and after then. The pictures
you
I've
can,
researched.
Yeah, it's available. I'm sure okay. you can find the plans or look okay. at them. I mean, I appreciate it. I understand. Yeah. But yes, these homes have been changed. A lot of them have been changed and altered from the original state. The home I purchased was altered from its original state. That front porch, it was originally a front porch. It was turned into a four-season room. The back was changed into a four-season area that was, and none of it supported properly. And you've been through the property, and mm-hmm. many of you have. You've seen the condition of it.
We realize these houses can't be museums, and they change with the times and change with the tastes. And we're hoping to help you keep some recognizable part of that house and the setback and those issues.
Well, the setback is, I would never change the setback, and I think obviously the village would be required to be set back to the original placement that it is. I mean, that's typically in all of River Forest. All the homes are, I would never move it forward, and I don't think you could.
You could, but that's glad I'll get here.
I don't think that it would happen, but I certainly would not.
Okay.
Rob, I think there's sort of two things we're concerned about as a commission. One is obviously the exterior of the home. Second is its impact upon the streetscape, not only the adjacent homes, but the entire street
sure.
as a cohesive unit. So at some point in time, we would probably want to see some kind of concept sketch as to once we got into any discussions down the road that would probably be one of the first things we'd want to look at.
Right, and
just informational.
As I mentioned earlier, I've started the process of the design of the new home.
Yep.
So, and I'm certainly more than willing to provide those once those are at least in process.
Yeah. Coming back to the question, though, are we asking for any kind of a financial business case on rehab versus building from scratch?
I think what you would do is if that's what you'd like to see, then make a motion and we'll take a vote.
And I would just ask that we be as specific as possible in
yep.
what we're requesting to the fairness of everybody involved.
I mean, one thing I'd like to bring up here, and I think you've dealt with us honorably, but anything we're going to get could have a bias to it if we collect it from the homeowner. Not because, you know, if you're going to ask an architect who maybe or somebody who's got
human
an
nature.
Investment, and, you know, it's just the
sure.
nature of things. And so if we're going to ask these things, you know, maybe we want to ask somebody who's a neutral party to come in and take a look at some of these and to give us the opinion. The homeowner's been very willing to let people have access to the facility and all that sort of thing. But it imposes financial cost on him to prepare these materials. They're extensive that they're asking for. I'm not saying we don't need them, but I'm just wondering if there's a way for us to get a neutral answer to some of these questions.
Applicants are people, and accordingly they're human, and I would assume that anyone, regardless of whom the applicant is, and Rob, you've been very upfront and very candid, we appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
Is that anybody who would be presenting something before any commission anywhere is certainly going to have an advocacy aspect to what they would be producing. So I think accordingly, while there would be value, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's something that is the last word either way. And it's just, it would be potentially interesting information, but probably not this positive because of the advocacy aspects. And that's just inherent in any application process before any commission anywhere.
I totally agree. But if we're going to use it as any kind of basis for a decision, I'd like to just, no, that's all.
Okay.
Some sort of, we get divorced and sell a house, you get three opinions, right? You get three evaluations on the house, right? Here, so I wish not the audience, right? if we're going to ask them, I'd like to maybe have something to weigh against. I don't know if that's an option.
I think the point that we're at is that the Chair Pro Tem is inviting motions to request additional information from the applicant. So I'd encourage anybody that wants to do so to do so, and we'll try to specify some language of what that entails. And then again, I would just say that to the question, if we can, I would say that the commission can make the request that they want to make. Should the applicant not want to fulfill those requests, we can use the village attorney as an appeal process of sort of what Commissioner Prestis lined out earlier, and I think that makes good sense.
To request a licensed engineer perform a structure report on 714 William.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
I'll give me 1 second to line that. Licensed engineer perform a structural report on 747 William. Can I ask the question, is that an industry standard term that anybody would understand? Okay.
Call the roll.
Yes, absolutely. Commissioner Prestis? Do you understand what you're voting on?
Yeah, I fully understand. Okay. I just wasn't clear that we were sure. I vote yes. Aye.
Commissioner Popowitz?
Aye.
Commissioner Raina Ogden?
Aye.
Commissioner Franek?
I, although I don't think it's dispositive because of the obvious advocacy issues, which is not a reflection on this or any other applicant. It's just inherent in the process.
Commissioner.
Aye.
I vote aye. The same comment that.
Let the record show that it was Commissioner Graham White and Commissioner Pritz also voting in favor. Okay. Unanimous decision. We'll put that on the books. That there would be opportunity for further motions, or if there are none.
Are there any other motions with respect to additional information?
The elevations are part of this already, correct?
The front, side, and rear elevation drawings have already been requested as specified in the ordinance. That is also includes a site plan. And I just want to stress that's of the current structure.
Is there any value in asking the question of will you enter negotiations? I mean, we've said it publicly, but I don't know if it's something that needs to be written down.
Like no, I would suggest that for the purposes of this meeting, what we want to do is we're specifically limited to those additional pieces of information we'd like to seek, as opposed to any kind of commitment one way or another. Any other requests that we'd like to propose, discuss, vote upon?
None here.
Okay, hearing none.
I just like to point out, just because it has come up previously in the conversation tonight, we're not including concept sketch or anything of the proposed.
Correct.
Okay, everybody's on board. Thank you.
Correct. Other business.
Just before we get to that, I just want to touch on agenda item 5. So just to be clear, the process of deciding on a public hearing date isn't something that needs to happen in open session. The date itself could be worked out otherwise, and then the notices can go forward. But just because we did settle on a date in public session previously, the 7th, which was made under the assumption that the current application was complete and using that timeline, since we've backed off that, I just want to say that we would cancel the November 7th public hearing for now and revisit the public hearing schedule when we receive a completed application, which right now is to include the site plan, front side rear elevation drawings, and the licensed engineer that a licensed engineer perform a structural report on 747 William.
So I'd like to keep the date, only because if we do get the complete materials and they're in time to have the public hearing, I'd like to have it sooner rather than later, because of this idea that the maximum interest in negotiating on both sides is there the earlier we kind of get through these issues, and if it takes too long. So I'd rather not cancel at this point, because if we come through with it, with a completed application, then there's still plenty of time between now and then.
I guess the reason why I'm canceling it is because the commission is required to or has the ability to call a public hearing when it receives a completed application. Since there hasn't been one received yet, they wouldn't call it, but I would encourage everybody to keep that date open if that's...
Yeah, well, we need a date for our next hearing, anyway, on regular business, right?
Next public meeting.
Because we haven't touched any of that tonight, particularly like this important issue.
That's fair.
Greg and some of them brought up, right, if they're other home and the help they're asking us for. So I think if we keep it, there's no downside, because we picked that date because the regular date was a little bit inconvenient.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is that we'll set November 7th as a regular meeting, the next regular
and
meeting.
And if we need to make it into...
That's fine.
Can I ask you if...
In our calendar.
If by holding the public hearing, does that change the six-month window?
I'm sorry, say that one more time. Holding the public hearing.
If you hold the public hearing November 7th,
no.
Does that change it?
The six-month window is based off of the receipt of the completed application.
Okay.
And then the period for the public hearing is 60 days from the receipt of the application. It could be as soon as the notice process allows, and then needs to conclude no later than 60 days after the receipt of the application. But I think that makes perfect sense. Perhaps I misunderstood the first time. We'll call November 7th, and then we'll call November 7th the next regularly scheduled meeting, since we know that date works.
And
if we need to make that the public hearing, we can. If we need to change it for some other reason, we can. Okay.
Given the amount of comment we've received so far, I would be in favor of holding the public hearing as a separate matter, as otherwise it's going to get really lengthy. Therefore, I would inquire as to whether we need to discuss and then vote formally upon changing the already scheduled public hearing date to a time to be determined based upon the fact that we do not have a completed application as opined by the village attorney, which is different information than we had last week at such time as we set the public hearing date.
Yeah, we can do that. And then I guess I would say, to your point of handling too much business in one evening, I would say we set November 7th as the regularly scheduled meeting. Should we be able to accommodate the public hearing on that date, we could cancel the regularly scheduled meeting and schedule a public hearing on the same date in formality. Are you comfortable with that?
Given the fact that there's probably more people interested in the public hearing than our normally regularly scheduled meeting,
right?
I'd like to provide as much information in advance to the public in terms of the date so people can determine schedules, whether it includes child care or whatever.
If it became the public hearing, you would use the normal notice process, which is the website, the sign outside the property, the newspaper, letters to everybody within 500 feet of the property, and so that's how the word would get out about the public hearing.
Have we formally set a public hearing date?
No, I would say we informally set a public hearing date in the open session last meeting by coordinating calendars for November 7th. I'd say the formal setting of that date would be the process of issuing the notices, which was never done.
Okay.
I have a question. This is also a request to the owner, Mr. Sarvis, because this affects not just basically the house on either side. This affects the entire block, and the process of letting neighbors know only extends to 500 feet, and I don't know how many houses there are in the block, but could we request that those letters go out to everybody on the 700 block of William if it's more than 500 feet?
I think they're all here.
I guess I'll put that in the same bucket that I'd put the other thing. Yeah. We can make that request,
and if
the applicant chooses to take issue with that, we could have it reviewed by the village's attorney, if that's fair.
There are 12 houses at 30 feet per lot in the block. That's 360 feet.
Yeah.
Going each way.
So it would.
Yeah.
Does that include both sides of the block?
Yes.
Does the applicant have any issue with making sure that every house on the block gets the public notice?
Block of William
yeah.
Receives? Sure.
Okay. I would imagine that everybody's comfortable with that. So probably not worth making it more of a deal.
Okay.
Then. Yeah.
May I ask one final question? I guess I'm hoping it's final, but I have no right to make it final. I sense some significant interest among some commissioners in this sort of middle of the road negotiate a decrease in the 6-month wait period in exchange for certain potential terms and conditions. Do we have reason to believe that the homeowner has a willingness at least to consider engaging in such a course of action in principle?
He stated it when he,
I think he said yes.
Stand before him. We asked him explicitly.
Okay, I thought it was more of a general point that
the ordinance,
he's willing to work with folks as opposed to this
specifically, would you be willing to enter into negotiations? And he said, yes, I would.
Okay.
I asked, do we have to formally ask that to document that? And he said, no, it's been asked and answered, and so we should be comfortable.
I just wanted to make sure we had total clarity on that, since I just didn't want to go too far down a road and find out that the answer is, well, no, I don't want to do that.
I'm trying to find it quickly, but the ordinance also states that in the issuance of demolition delay, and you'd remember better than me, the applicant has a responsibility to engage with the commission and talks about other solutions.
I just wanted to make sure he was fully willing to specifically negotiate.
To consider it.
Exactly, Michael. That's exactly my
that's
point.
The question I asked. We had no doubt what I was asking. Yeah.
I think I answered that.
Yeah. No, but I think
you understood the question.
My question was clear, and your answer was,
I'm trying to illustrate, yes, I believe I answered.
All right, so I just want to clarify then that that upon the receipt by the village of item 4, which is, again, I apologize for being a site plan, front, side, and rear elevation drawings, as well as the receipt of a licensed engineered a report by a licensed engineer to perform a structural report on the property at 747 William, as well as the request that everybody, if not included in the 500 feet on the 700 block of William, receive the public notice on the receipt of those two issues, item 4 and the structural report, we would consider the application complete, which at that point, I would come to the commission and ask that we proceed with calling a public hearing.
What we're looking for would be a report from a licensed structural engineer.
Yep, got it.
So it can't be an architect who is a licensed structural. It could be an architect who is licensed as a structural engineer.
Sure.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, understood. So back to the other business.
Any other business?
No. Not tonight.
Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thanks, everyone.